the noon hour, but Mr. Bonham is here, and we'll, he's willing to come back afterwards, he said, but, you know, we can take care of it now. And we do have in a packet to you PowerPoint. It's in this beige colored folder from today.
Thank you, sir.
Makes sense to me. How about you?
Oh, good.
Thank you, kind sir.
That's it, John.
So, since I'm in between you and lunch, I'll just take an hour instead of 2 hours.
At your own peril, Mr. Bonham.
Good morning, board chair, board members, staff. My name is Chuck Bonham, and I'm Trout Unlimited's California director. And in the spirit of full disclosure, I'm also a senior attorney for the organization. I want to thank you for the opportunity to make an informational presentation today. I encourage you to ask questions that you may have. The focus of the presentation is near and dear to my organization, and it's critical to our success on our mission, which is to protect, conserve, and restore California's salmon, steelhead, and trout. In 1997, we launched a project that we called the North Coast Coho Project to work directly with the commercial timber industry. At the time, that was both threatening to some and progressive to others. I'm going to tell you a little bit about the history in that effort, the progress to date, and I'm going to end with a proposal that looks out to the future. I'd like you to focus on the grayer shade, which doesn't show up in the visual, but effectively is the coastal strip. Those are coastal, privately owned landscapes. They represent the major portion of the distance that salmon and steelhead must travel on their journey to and from the Pacific Ocean. Another way to conceptualize this region is through its waterways. These rivers typically are the weakest link in the salmon journey because production activities on lands have filled them with sediment or have bisected them with culverts or other barriers to migration. Now, the core philosophy for this project in 1997 was that we could establish long-term joint ventures with single large landowners, and that doing so was a smart strategy to promote restoration across tens of thousands of acres, or even hundreds of thousands of acres. Now, this philosophy translates to thinking across an entire regional watershed landscape like the South Fork Eel here. Said another way, really the big challenges facing salmon require big scales of action. That was our original thinking in 1997. I think we got it right. We joined forces with Mendocino Redwood Company and Campbell Timberland Management. That has created a real and ongoing opportunity to pursue coho restoration across approximately 300,000 acres of private timberlands just in Sonoma and Mendocino County alone. And the result is projects like the one in this slide, culvert replacement, road mitigation strategy, and construction of new bridges. The regional and watershed scale really results in a couple of things that are specific. First, the identification. Second, the development. And third, the implementation of large-scale restoration, like in the Noyo watershed here. This stimulates the restoration goals to be bigger, bolder, more systematic, rather than incremental as to change, individualistic, or piecemeal. And I'll just go ahead and speak up directly and elevate my voice.
Recording.
So, using the Noyo example, this vision allows us to focus not just on one of those blue streams, but on all of those blue streams. You know, and don't need me to tell you, that coho populations have suffered a tremendous decline. From, say, 1940 until today, the numbers have dropped approximately from maybe 400,000 down to below 10,000 of annually returning, naturally producing fish. Their recovery is a state, regional, national, local priority, particularly given the recent impacts to commercial and tribal fisheries, most dramatically seen this year. Now, the causes of the decline are the same across the whole Northwest. Habitat loss from urbanization, dams, forestry, overfishing, mining, etc. But here I pause, and I remember something I heard once that Dwight Eisenhower said, which is, quote, "You don't promote the cause by talking only to those who agree with you." So in 1997, it was difficult for Chad Unlimited, but important to go directly to progressive members of the timber industry, because only talking to our own community was not going to result in direct on-the-ground restoration. Personal opinion. I believe that bringing those who own and work the land into the ranks of those who seek to bring back these fish creates the greatest potential to permanently restore and protect these rivers and landscapes. And it best ensures that the next generation of Californians will see healthy fisheries in their watersheds. And that's the goal of our North Coast Coho Project. I would sum it up by way of two phrases or two words, landscape stewardship. And the result are projects like this. This slide speaks for itself. The list of partners is diverse. Over that 10-year time frame, we've taken public and matched it with private funds for a significant investment of on-the-ground restoration. But I think the next factoid is actually the real take-home. And this is the limit of my PowerPoint wizardry. Look at that. Whoa. For us, this is about solving problems. The effort we've designed is one which results in bigger capacity investment. They're more intensive. They're more comprehensive. With our partners, effectively what we do is we inventory entire road systems across these timberlands, not a half-mile section, the entire road system, and we develop appropriate responses. Those are designed to solve problems through fill removal, hill slope recontouring, setting stream channels to grade, constructing Humboldt crossings. Now, at this point, you might be asking, when's lunch, and Chuck, what the heck does this have to do with the regional board? I think it's got a lot to do with the regional board. As you know, you're responsible for a basin plan, which is effectively a strategy to ensure that all designated beneficial uses are protected, including salmon and steelhead. The regional board has taken bold implementation steps. You have precise and ambitious action plans like the one that's represented in this slide. Moreover, you manage or influence public funding of programs and policies. Our work occurs in places with familiar names: the Gowalla River, Ten Mile, Noyo, Navarro, Hollow Tree Creek, South Fourth Eel, Garcia, so on. Those are the very same rivers that show up in some of your action plan priority places. Let me take just one example by way of wrapping up this presentation, the Garcia. Now, the threats to salmon and steelhead are numerous. There's no one single limiting factor, and there's no one industry responsible for the decline of the fishery. That's part of the challenge. But it is possible in a place like the Garcia to isolate and address certain key limiting factors, for example, water quality. Now, our timber company partnerships focus on sediment control and removal from timberlands and timber roads, and that's a key, if not the key, limiting factor in the Garcia, shown by the pie chart. I think the road-related sources is the largest slice of that pie. We target projects based on regional, federal, and state fishery plans. From time to time, we do small opportunistic projects. We get big bang for little investment. We can replace a culvert or take out a small dam in a collaborative fashion. But more often, the philosophy is the identification, development, and implementation of system-wide restoration. And in the Garcia, for example, the payoff has been quite huge. Work in that watershed has resulted in the prevention of about 28,000 cubic yards of sediment from entering the Garcia. That's about 3,000 dump trucks of sludge. And I realize now I could do better with my font so you could see that. That's good for the fish. It's good for landowners. Improved conditions and a recovered fishery reduces regulatory uncertainty and increases business certainty. It's pretty easy. Let me end with a last slide here and put something in context. We look across the north coast of California and we see four integral elements to success. They're described in the article I took the liberty of providing you. First, we've got to protect the last best kind of preserved spaces. Those tend to be the high elevation roadless areas. Second, we've got to reconnect stream systems through improving stream flow and removing barriers to migration. We have to restore the degraded landscape. But if we do all of that, we've still failed in our judgment because we haven't sustained an effort. Sustain means build a movement broader than just ourselves. At the core of that is talking to people who you traditionally disagree with. That's at the spirit of the North Coast Coho Project. We now have something we're talking about called Salmon 2040, which for us is a commitment to the idea that by the end of the next generation, statistically about 36 years, we can bring these fish back in California, north of San Francisco. We can do it. California is known for a passion tackling challenging problems. This is one of them. And for us, the North Coast Coho Project is the restoration prong of that recipe. Wallace Stegner, who's my favorite Western author, once urged us to remember we've got a duty to create a society that's as magic as our scenery. He tells us that it's not our rugged individualism that's our best trademark as Westerners. Rather, it's our understanding that when times are tough and we come to the common marketplace together, we can solve these problems as Westerners. And that's really what I think we've done here with the North Coast Coho Project, trying to build a relationship with timber, which did not exist in 1997, and as a result, is helpful on limiting factors like sediment. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Chuck. Board member, questions?
I just had one, Chuck. Have you hooked up with Mark Lancaster and the Five County Project? They deal with a lot smaller acreage, but where their project scope and vision is ensuring that county roads and culverts mm-hmm. don't block the migration of fish to private lands. And what's unique about it is he's been successful in getting the cash-strapped counties to buy into it, and I just think it'd be a great contact in the future.
Thank you for that suggestion, Board Member Corbett. And one of our experiences is that often the best value we can add as a national organization isn't to attempt to implement a project, perhaps, as much as put parties together who are better placed or more knowledgeable in a particular neighborhood to do a project.
And so then one other thing, we are trying to develop guidelines for projects whose purpose is environmental restoration, mm-hmm. to have an adequate way to navigate the permit process. So mm-hmm. we still have to be very careful it's not used for otherwise required mitigation, but we are trying to move to provide a petri dish for kinds of good work like you're doing. And
that also prompts me to encourage you and the board to continue that thinking. A hallmark of the Department of Fish and Game's Fisheries Restoration Grant Program, as you know, is a more manageable permitting process to then do these actual restoration projects.
I'd just like to make a comment, Chair. Having worked with the California Conservation Corps and been involved with the salmon restoration program for, I don't know, about 14 consecutive years, I have put in a lot of habitat improvement and, you know, and erosion control and all those things, and have seen a lot of effects of a lot of different things. And even though the historical numbers of fish are rather high compared to what they are today, we have a good investment going, and even though the numbers aren't returning like we always anticipate that they will, we are still fighting a good battle, and numbers are we are making headway in a lot, you know, a lot of different efforts are making headway.
I concur. I work across California and the West, and although I'm not giving up on difficult places, for example, like the Central Valley, if I think about your jurisdiction, it is, relatively speaking, easier to identify a shorter list of limiting factors and come up with progressive solutions to actually recover these fish within a generation.
Mayor.
Heidi.
I'm a river kid. Grew up on the river my entire life. That's all we ever did in the summer. Thank you for being one of those people who looks out for our rivers. I work also with private landowners on large land projects, and the I would venture to say that the major scope of the projects are always water quality in regards to spring developments and water troughs, rather than using dugouts and sediment, reducing sediment off overland flows from overused grazed lands and different things like that. So one of the things that this board has heard me express in the past is I am yet to be, I guess I could say I'm just always very impressed with what private landowners are willing to do when given the opportunity, when given the backing, and when they have facilitation through, you know, someone that can set them down at the table with all the people, because most of them don't have time to do that, nor do they have the capacity to dive through all the permittings. So anyway, I love collaboration, and I love the use of private landowners and getting folks involved. They will spend more of their time and more of their money when you request it and you put them at the table than they ever will if they're regulated. So I love that. And then, too, I must tell you that my kids are 2 and 6, and they both think that fishing is the greatest pastime God ever created. Their father never sits for a moment in the evening without them saying, "Can we go fishing? Can we go fishing?" And we're blessed. We live on the South Fork of the Trinity, and we have our own lake, and so he has no excuse because it's there. So my 2-year-old loves to ask his dad 250,000 times as soon as the hook is cast, "Is you got a bite? You got a bite? You got a bite?" So fishing is a big part of our life. So I appreciate all your efforts.
Board Member Harris, let me thank you for your comments and just be patently obvious about this. There's membership information in the magazine I distributed. No, joking aside, I love reading the thinking of the individuals who formed the kind of foundation for conservation and conservation biology, and Aldo Leopold is one of those. And he once wrote in Sand County Almanac that the two things that matter most to him are the relationship of people to the land, and second, the relationship between people. And in my experience, one thing that often isn't emphasized enough in designing conservation strategy is the importance of relationships in solving problems. And the dialogue you can create with a landowner that builds a relationship is usually, in my experience, the one that fosters a solution.
So, Chuck, I'm curious. Money is tight. You said that, you know, when you go into a watershed, you want to do a entire assessment of the entire watershed. How do you decide? I mean, it takes more money to do that, do it right, so you do fewer projects, or how do you handle that?
You ask a question which is on the mind of many in the restoration field, mostly because, in my opinion, the wisest use of public funds requires prioritization, which naturally means someone's project is lower on the list than someone else's. For Trout Unlimited, we've actually been asking ourselves that tough question, and within a year we've developed a model we call the Conservation Success Index. And what we're trying to do is figure out a way to apply our own model to guide our prioritization decisions. Until we can get that completed, we rely on the state of California's Coho Recovery Strategy, as well as what we hope will soon be published, NIMS recovery plans, and we think about the places in which we can marry progressive landowner potential with it also being a high-ranking fish place, and that's how we sort out where to focus. It is a prioritization and a tough process.
All right. Anyone else? We have a public comment. I'll take it. Yeah, come forward. Just 1 second.
Very quickly, I have a question I'd like to address.
If you would just identify yourself, please.
Yes, I'll do that. My name is Joseph Furnish. I'm the regional aquatic ecologist for the Forest Service in the regional office. And I was just came as a representative, just considering our land ownership and other factors. I'd simply like to pose a question to Chuck here, as well as our last speaker, if he's available, and that is, and to all of us, and that is, How and to what degree do we need to take global climate change into consideration for TMDLs or Coho recovery and so forth? Maybe we don't have an answer for this. It's a very complex. There's some very nuanced kinds of relationships and so on. I just would like to encourage everyone to think about that. And I would welcome any comments that Chuck may have with regard to thinking of their group.
Right.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
We've thought about it, and it's our opinion that very little discussion in the context of global warming goes towards the concern related to fish and wildlife, arguably the resources which may most dramatically be affected by climate change. And we believe that we're just going to continue doing what we're doing now, but doing more of it and doing it better, which is to say, protecting the last best backcountry wildlands, places that are refugia, reconnecting our stream systems by improving stream flow and removing barriers to migration so that species can access that refugia, restoring the degraded landscape, and building a long-term movement for those outcomes.
Okay, Oak.
I just had one comment. I just want to say that Garcia is one of the success stories.
Sure.
And when we're presented with TMDL planning and everything else, people keep going, well, gee, it worked in the Garcia, it worked in the Garcia, it worked in the Garcia. So thank you for whatever and all role you played in that.
Thank you for your time. Have a great lunch.
All right. Yeah. Thank you. And the board will be back at 2 o'clock.
Ha, 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 ha.